Hi, Dave Emery here. Side one of For the Record program number 794. The fires this time. Update on the Ukraine. This is being recorded on May 25th of the year 2014. Before we launch into the main part of the broadcast, remember that all of my life's work is available for download for free on the SpitfireList.com website. There is also a small library of old anti-fascist books and a tremendous amount of contribution by listeners who have made some very intelligent, substantive, and useful commentary and information by a very productive and brilliant and incisive contributing editor named Terra Fractal. That's his nom de plume. Also, every For the Record program, this is a hybrid form of broadcasting. The programs obviously are meant to be listened to. They also are meant to be read. And so if the format that I use is a little bit too pedantic, I understand that. Please use the long article-length written descriptions for the record shows. They often contain information not contained in the original broadcast, and so you can take time, stretch out, and read the information as well. Now, we are going to be updating our coverage of the Ukraine For the Record programs 777 through 784, deal with the Ukrainian crisis, and we're going to be updating a number of different things. Originally, the first part of the program is going to deal with matters economic vis-a-vis the Ukraine. As we have discussed in the past, 25%, a quarter of the proven natural gas reserves on the face of the earth, are in the Ukraine. There is a map from a BBC article that is included, embedded in the description, and when you look, you can see that the vast bulk of those resources are in the eastern Ukraine and Crimea. We're going to be talking about the appointment of both R. Hunter Biden, Vice President Joe Biden's son, and also a guy named Devin Archer, who was the college roommate of John Kerry's stepson and the co-finance chair of John Kerry's 2004 campaign. They have both been appointed to the board of directors of a company that has heavy investment in the eastern Ukraine natural gas area. Also, we're going to be talking about not only EU energy policy, but also the transatlantic trade agreement and how that may be impacting fracking in the U.S. If things go forward, it would appear that not only is the production of greenhouse gases going to accelerate, but the planned degeneration of the U.S. environment through the very destructive practice of fracking is going to accelerate as well. Much of the program is going to be dealing with, once again, the depredations of the OUNB heirs in the Ukraine. OUNB was the Nazi collaborationist organization of the Ukraine during World War II. It was explicitly fascist. It had SS and Gestapo components, headed up by Stefan Bandera. It then jumped to Western intelligence. It became a major element of the Republican Party's Ethnic Outreach Council and found prominent representation in the Reagan administration. The Reagan administration and Western intelligence, including and especially CIA, served as something of an incubator for the OUNB, which was then projected into the Ukraine. Much of the combat that has been taking place in the eastern Ukraine has been conducted by sort of conscripted, or really that would be the wrong word, but nationalized neo-Nazi combat units that were involved with the coup in the Maidan this past winter. And we're going to be taking a look at something that really should not surprise us, and that is the apparently deliberate tactic that is being employed by these Nazi cadre of herding their political opponents into buildings and then burning the buildings alive. We're also going to be looking at a series of posts by Robert Perry of Consortium News that cover, among other things, the deeply Orwellian nature of the coverage in the U.S. Simply, it is not possible to talk about neo-Nazis in the American press. The German press, by the way, has been much better, though at the same time, it also has been distorting in the fundamental way, most of their coverage, distorting in the fundamental way what has been taking place in the Ukraine. In both Germany and the U.S., officialdom, including apparently the intelligence services of both countries and the elements of the military staffs of both countries, have been supportive of the Nazi cadre, plural, in the Ukraine. We're going to be taking a look at the deliberate misrepresentation by worldwide and German media of a contingent of Bundeswehr officers that was detained by pro-Russian separatists in the eastern Ukraine. The worldwide media have been calling that an OSCE mission. That's the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. It was no such thing. It was a German military intelligence operation apparently involved with coordinating the combat that took place there. Also, according to GermanForeignPolicy.com, elements of FBI and CIA have been advising the Ukrainians. There was a visit by John Brennan, director of CIA, to confer with the Ukrainian leadership. And GermanForeignPolicy.com also alleges that a number of elite combatants from the former Blackwater private security organization have been active in the Ukraine. That is some of what we have on tap here, so we're going to launch right into it. Do note again that although the German media have been engaged in serious and willful distortion, there has been better coverage in the German media than in the U.S. Some German media outlets, for example, there was a good article in Der Spiegel, have been much more forthcoming about the true nature of the events in the Ukraine. Most of their media coverage has been deliberately slanted, but theirs has been a whole lot better than ours. Now, I guess you could say what's going on in the Ukraine. Jumpin' Jack Flash, it's a gas, gas, gas. As we have talked about in the past, 25% of all of the proven natural gas reserves on the face of the planet Earth are in the Ukraine. Most of those are in the eastern Ukraine, and that is not incidental to what we are about to cover. From Yahoo News of May 14th of 2014, why did an energy firm with big assets in the Ukraine hire Joe Biden's son? It's by Olivia Knox, KNOX, and Meredith Shiner, S-H-I-N-E-R. It reads in part, in the span of a few weeks, an energy firm little known inside the U.S. added two members to its board of directors, scoring connections to Secretary of State John Kerry and Vice President Joe Biden in the bargain. On April 22nd, Cyprus-based Burisma announced that financier Devin Archer had joined its board. Archer, A-R-C-H-E-R, who shared a room in college with Kerry's stepson, Christopher Hynt, served as national finance co-chair to the former senator's 2004 presidential campaign. Then on Monday, the firm announced that Biden's younger son, R. Hunter Biden, would join the board of directors. Why would this company, which bills itself as Ukraine's largest private gas producer, needs such powerful friends in Washington? The answer might be the company's holdings in Ukraine. They include, according to the firm's website, permits to explore in the Dnieper Donetsk Basin in the country's eastern regions, home to an armed pro-Russian separatist movement. They also include permits to explore in the Azov-Kuban Basin of the strategic Crimean Peninsula, annexed earlier this year by Moscow. And I would suggest that obviously the authors of this article are, their tone is somewhat tongue-in-cheek. It's pretty darned obvious why this company hired Devin Archer and R. Hunter Biden to its board of directors, because that gives them direct access to the U.S. political leadership. And they are obviously hoping that that in turn will produce enough on-the-ground gravitas to help their natural gas business in the disputed areas of the eastern Ukraine. Another sort of Ukraine slash fossil fuels slash energy related development concerns are the proposal to increase fracking and offshore oil drilling in the U.S., in part to increase U.S. fossil fuel exports to the EU to offset or to sort of permit the European Union to move away from natural gas dependence on Russia. The following is from the Huffington Post of May 19th of 2014. It's by Zach Carter and Kate Shepherd. It's called Read the Secret Trade Memo Calling for More Fracking and Offshore Drilling. It reads in part, the EU is pressing the Obama administration to expand U.S. fracking, offshore oil drilling, and natural gas exploration under the terms of a secret negotiation text obtained by the Huffington Post. The controversial document is an early draft of energy policies that EU negotiators hope to see adopted under the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, or TTIP, trade deal, which is currently being negotiated. The text was shared with American officials in September. The Office of the U.S. Trade Representative declined to comment on the document. There has been an increasing push to loosen constraints on natural gas exports from the U.S. to Europe, particularly as the conflict between Russia and the Ukraine has grown, highlighting Europe's dependence on Russian energy. And the article also notes that these global trade agreements tend to restrict the regulation of environmental considerations. This augurs very poorly for the world's environment and for the U.S. environment in particular. Offshore oil drilling and fracking will hurt us, polluting our waters, both drinking water and also our offshore waters as well. And, of course, increased use of fossil fuels will increase the production of greenhouse gases, and that will be a lot of fun in the future. Also, with regard to Europe's dependence on Russian gas, there has been a proposal floated in Europe to establish an EU energy consortium, which would have sort of an EU-wide monopoly on energy production and distribution. It has been endorsed by Donald Tusk, Prime Minister of Poland, and also by Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany. Reuters of April 24th of 2014 has the following. Merkel tells Putin Russia has not done enough to ease Ukraine crisis. It's by Alexandra Hudson and Eric Kirschbaum. It reads in part, Germany's Angela Merkel said on Friday that she had told Russian President Vladimir Putin by telephone that Moscow had not done enough to urge separatists in Ukraine to disarm and that further sanctions against Russia must be contemplated. The European Union and Group of Seven Nations would consider sanctions, quote, under the framework of the second stage of sanctions, she said at a news conference in Berlin with Poland's Prime Minister Donald Tusk, skipping down. Poland's Tusk warned, quote, the crisis in Ukraine may become permanent, which could require a new Eastern policy from Europe, unquote. He added that he could not imagine Europe sticking to a business-as-usual position. Tusk has urged the EU to create an energy union to secure its natural gas supply and weaken its current dependence on Russian gas. Jean-Claude Juncker, J-U-N-C-K-E-R, a candidate for European Commission president, was quoted by Polish state agency PAP on Friday as saying that the energy union proposal was a, quote, intelligent and wise proposal, unquote. Merkel said she supported the idea in principle, but the details would need to be worked out and a joint market and joint structure was necessary. So whether this leads to a further consolidation of power in Europe, which is dominated by Germany, into an energy union remains to be seen. I will also note that Poland has tremendous coal reserves, and that one of the things Donald Tusk has been pushing for is developing those coal reserves. It was the coal reserves of Poland which were contemplated as being able to use the Fischer-Tropsch hydrogenation process developed by IG Farben to produce various fossil fuels, including gasoline, at the fossil fuel at the hydrogenation plant that was taking advantage of labor from Auschwitz. That was why Auschwitz was picked. The city of Oswiecim was picked for the site of the Auschwitz camp, was to provide labor for that proposed project. And it remains to be seen if ultimately we see sort of a Neue Oswiecim as part of the development of Polish coal reserves as part of an EU energy union. Another interesting piece of economic news vis-a-vis the Ukraine is the fact that Ukraine has issued $1 billion worth of bonds. And these bonds, Ukraine, by the way, the reason that Ukraine has been such a focal point of unrest in general is the fact that Ukraine, the Ukrainian governments, including Mr. Yanukovych, have been both deeply corrupt and also incompetent, and the result is that the Ukrainian economy is a basket case. Well, the Ukraine has just issued $1 billion in bonds, and these are being underwritten by the U.S. taxpayer. A very good author, a characteristically excellent story, was in the ZeroHedge.com of May 14th of 2014. It's by Tyler, T-Y-L-E-R, Durden, D-U-R-D-E-N. Ukraine just issued $1 billion of bonds backed by the U.S. taxpayer. And it reads in part, "The bailout floodgates are open, and the U.S. taxpayer is footing the bill once again, whether through IMF loans or more directly." Today saw the Ukraine issue $1 billion worth of five-year notes at a stunningly low risk of only 28 BPS above U.S. Treasuries, and dramatically cheaper than the debt than the cost of capital in the public markets and from the IMF, which yield over 10%. The reason for the one, low cost, and two, actual ability to raise debt: the bond is guaranteed by the U.S. Agency for International Development and, quote, assures full repayment of principal and interest, unquote, based on the full faith and credit of the U.S. taxpayer. And then Tyler Durden notes, "We assume that Gazprom will be happy." Skipping down, "The $1 billion loan guarantee that the U.S. Agency for International Development will implement will help the government of Ukraine access capital at reasonable rates and manage the transition to a prosperous democracy," unquote, Mark Feierstein, assistant administrator at USAID, said in April. Well, that sounds very nice indeed. Bear in mind that what took place in the Ukraine was not a, quote, revolution, unquote, but a coup which was the direct outgrowth of a covert operation. Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland, who had much to do with this and who, by the way, is married to one of the principal people from the Project for a New American Century. She was addressing a pro-Ukrainian organization here in the U.S. and disclosed that the U.S. had $5 billion, that's a billion as in bad, invested in political developments in the Ukraine. That is roughly $120 for every man, woman, and child in the country of the Ukraine. And some of the funds that went to finance the NGOs behind the coup came from the U.S. Agency for International Development. One of their partners in that was Pierre Omidyar, Glenn Greenwald's financial angel. Now, in, for the record, 781, we took a look at Viktor Yushchenko, who came to power in the so-called Orange Revolution, and who, as the president of Ukraine, instituted an absolutely Orwellian rewrite of Ukrainian history, in which the OUNB were portrayed as heroes, anti-fascists, the defenders of Jews and Poles against the Nazi depredations. In fact, that was a complete reversal of the facts. We also noted in 781, as well as in other programs, that Viktor Yushchenko's wife, when he was the head of the Ukraine, president of Ukraine, was a woman named Ekaterina Shumachenko. She was not only an aide to OUNB head of state Yaroslav Stetsko, who headed up the OUNB collaborationist authority in Ukraine during World War II, she was also a member of a top OUNB front organization in the U.S., the UCCA. Even more importantly, she was Ronald Reagan's deputy director of presidential liaison. She then became the first lady of the Ukraine under Viktor Yushchenko, who created the Institute for National Memory, which completely rewrote the World War II history of the Ukraine in a pro-Nazi, pro-fascist, and pro-OUNB manner that paved the way for the rise of Svoboda and Pravi Sektor heirs to the OUNB. We're going to examine another aspect of the Yushchenko regime, and that is the fact that another American-born OUNB activist, a fellow named Roman Zavarych, I've seen that spelled Z-V-A-R-Y-C-H, and also Z-A-V-R-Y-C-H. Bear in mind that it is being transliterated from the Cyrillic alphabet. Roman Zavarych was born in the Yonkers in New York. The state of New York is just outside of New York City. And he had been the personal secretary in the early 1980s to Yaroslav Stetsko. Yaroslav Stetsko, again, headed up the OUNB occupation authority in the Ukraine during World War II. We'll hear more about him later. Under Viktor Yushchenko, Roman Zavarych, again, the secretary to Yaroslav Stetsko in the early 1980s, became Minister of Justice in the Ukraine. Basically, he was in charge of the Justice Ministry, the equivalent of our Attorney General. From GermanForeignPolicy.com, which feeds along the lower right-hand side of the front page of the SpitfireList.com website, of May 1st of 2014, there is an article, Scientific Nationalists. This is an interview with Professor Per Anders Rudling, R-U-D-L-I-N-G, of Lund University in Sweden, that's capital L-U-N-D. He has done some excellent work about the Yushchenko regime and its rewriting of Ukrainian history in order to pave the way for the rise of the OUNB during the recent coup. And in Scientific Nationalists, we read the following. In the 1980s, Yushchenko's wife, Katerina, had been active in Ukrainian right-wing emigre circles. She had worked with Yaroslav Stetsko as an assistant and is a true believer of the OUNB's political narratives. In 2005, Yushchenko had also appointed a New York Bandera follower and Yaroslav Stetsko's former secretary, Roman Zavarych, to be Minister of Justice of the Ukraine. Zavarych was later fired for having lied about having a PhD from Columbia University. Much of the rest of our program is going to be dedicated to accessing a number of very important posts by Robert Perry, last name P-A-R-R-Y, of the ConsortiumNews.com website. Robert Perry has been one of the relatively few observers to note the Orwellian nature of the U.S. journalistic coverage of what is going on in the Ukraine, including the complete unwillingness to talk about the Nazi elements that are in the vanguard of what has been taking place in the Ukraine. We're going to talk about that, about how there has been a complete reversal of facts, what Adolf Hitler encouraged in Mein Kampf. He said, most people tell little lies. They would be ashamed to tell big ones. They would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts. We have been seeing that in connection with the Ukraine. Hitler also said, first, tame the intellectuals, then take them to the fields and hitch them to your racehorses. We've been seeing that in the Ukraine as well. Perry notes that. He also notes that the Nazi street fighting contingent that was in the vanguard of the Euromaidan struggle were basically incorporated into the Ukrainian National Guard. They were then sent to the eastern Ukraine in order to engage in combat with the pro-Russian separatists, and they have deliberately burned buildings with the people locked in those buildings. And Robert Perry notes that these forces were being incorporated into the Ukrainian national security establishment by people from Svoboda and Pravi Sektor, two of the OUND successor organizations, and that they were being employed as counter-terror forces. And as Perry notes, there is a very long and inglorious and extremely bloody history to the use of such forces. It generally involves death squad activity, extrajudicial killings, and counter-terror themselves. And these articles by Perry are very important. We're going to begin with one from April 15th of 2014, Ukraine Through the U.S. Looking Glass by Robert Perry. It reads in part as follows, skipping down. On Tuesday, Andriy Parubiy, P-A-R-U-B-I-Y, head of the Ukrainian National Security Council, and I would note a member of the OUND Air Svoboda organization, went on Twitter to declare, quote, reserve unit of National Guard formed from Maidan self-defense volunteers was sent out to the front line this morning, unquote. Parubiy was referring to the neo-Nazi militias that provided the organized muscle that overthrew Viktor Yanukovych, forcing him to flee for his life. Some of these militias have since been incorporated into security forces as, quote, National Guard, unquote. Parubiy himself is a well-known neo-Nazi who founded the Social National Party of the Ukraine in 1991. The party blended racial Ukrainian nationalism with neo-Nazi symbols. Parubiy also formed a paramilitary spin-off, the Patriots of Ukraine, and defended the awarding of the title Hero of the Ukraine to World War II Nazi collaborator Stefan Bandera, whose own paramilitary forces exterminated thousands of Jews and Poles in pursuit of a, quote, racially pure Ukraine. But the U.S. press, skipping down, the U.S. press has played down his role because his neo-Nazism conflicts with official Washington's narrative that neo-Nazis play little or no role in the, quote, revolution, unquote. References to neo-Nazis in the interim government, unquote, are dismissed as, quote, Russian propaganda, unquote. Yet there probably was on Tuesday bragging that some of his neo-Nazi stormtroopers renamed, quote, National Guard, unquote, were now being sicked on rebellious eastern Ukraine as part of the Kiev government's anti-terrorist operation. We'll continue with this in Side 2. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 794, The Fires This Time. Update on the Ukraine. This has been recorded on May 25th of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.